Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
And welcome along, Mind Food Radio, another exciting episode. You've been in Hong Kong.
I know, and I know you're going to ask, where's my duty-free gift or my gift? Look, I was
You go away so much, well, it's sort of normal.
I kind of ran out of time, but the thing is, I was there to do a story on the oldest hotel in Hong Kong.
The Peninsula.
That's right, and wow. I got incredible access, back of the, you know, all the behind the scenes that no one ever sees, and this fantastic, amazing new technology that I think all hotels around the world will eventually do,
yeah,
where it's a complete paperless room, and everything is controlled by a panel by your bed.
Another world. So that's coming up on today's program. Also, we're going to be chatting with Dr. Trina Reed, our sexologist.
That's right. And Melinda Eyre, our beauty specialist on how to look after problem skin. Because I've noticed, Ben, I don't want to say anything.
I'm not no hypochondria.
Is that adult acne?
All that and more on Mind Food Radio.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Well, this is a very interesting topic. Dr. Trina Reed's joining us now. Make your married sex irresistible.
That's right. Now, Trina is the author of Till Sex Do Us Part. And I've got to say, ever since that 50 Shades of Grey has arrived, everyone seems to be talking sex.
And, well, I thought you were going to say, I don't have a vested interest.
Well, even my mother-in-law, who has just had a very magic birthday, she's reading it. So, of course, my teenage daughters are all going, ooh. But it's extraordinary out there. So welcome to the show, Dr. Trina.
Well, thank you. And did it freak you out that your mother-in-law is telling you she's reading 50 Shades?
Well, do you know what? We celebrated.
He's having counselling. Don't worry.
We just had her birthday and she sort of started talking about it and everyone was just going, ooh, stop talking about it. So it did kind of make us all go a little icky. But tell us, this book has been a great seller. It really has, Till Sex Do Us Part. Tell us a little bit first about that.
Well, I was married for about 3 years. I was flying all over the world giving seminars. And I came home one day, and my husband of 3 years said, we're going to a marriage counselor, and I sat across from him on a marriage counselor's couch listening as he complained that we weren't having sex. Now, I don't know if you can get the irony of being a sex expert going around the world telling people how to have sex, and I ain't getting any in my own marriage. So at that point, I decided that I needed to fix my marriage. I needed to fix this. And so I went to all my books and I tried to, you know, glean from the books ideas on how to have a better sex life. And I tried them, you know, scheduling sex and the romantic evenings. Nothing was working. And finally, just when my marriage was about to go into the toilet, I figured out, I had this epiphany that it wasn't just me. There are millions and millions of couples who are experiencing this exact same situation where we are in a partnership, we love our partner, but for some reason we just don't feel like having sex anymore. So I made it my mission to find out why, and that's why I wrote this book. The book was to help me, of course, but it was also to help the other millions of women to figure out why their sexual desire diminished, but more importantly, what women can do to get it back.
Now, I have to ask, are you and your husband still together?
Yes, we are. We have two kids, and even with the two kids, we're still making it happen. But I really want to emphasize that, you know, it's a daily effort. Like, there's nothing smooth about it. We have to make our relationship a priority, and sometimes we do and sometimes we don't, and there's ebbs and flows, and just because you're a sex expert doesn't mean that you're having crazy wild sex. And I think that's important for people, because I think a lot of people think that they are alone in what they're going through, and they're absolutely not. Relationships are a lot of work, and everybody wants the sex part to be effortless, when in fact it's probably a lot more work than the relationship is.
Do you think people worry, though, that, you know, if they're going to tell their partner what they really want, the partner's going to go, oh my God, really?
Absolutely. And you know what's really interesting about that point? It's been my experience that couples, they separately share these fantasies that they really want to try, but they're just too scared to bring it up to their partner, because they do think, oh my gosh, my partner will think I'm crazy. And actually, a really good idea I give out a lot is for couples to write a list out. So there's three columns to the list. So the first column is things I would love to try. The second column would be things I'd be willing to try. And the third column is the things I would never want to try. And you both write these three columns out and you exchange it with your partner. And not only does this give you ideas about what you can try, new things that you can try with your partner, but if you want to raise the ante, you can surprise your partner one night with one of their suggestions.
Dr. Trina, great to have you on the show today. So Dr. Trina Reid, the author of Till Sex Do Us Part, for more details, you can go to mindfood.com.
I love walking, as you know, Michael. I try and do at least 21 Ks a week.
Well, we live in a beautiful city and
we
there are so many great walks. And
and Walktober is just around the corner.
Don't you love that name?
I do.
I'd like to welcome to the show Fiona Bailey. She is the CEO of Physical Activity Australia. I didn't even know that existed. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, Michael.
Now, what does that mean, Physical Activity Australia?
So Physical Activity Australia is an organisation that essentially and very simply has one key role, and that is to get every Australian every day physically active. Despite all the information that we've had available or have available to us, and despite everything we know, we as a nation are seeing a downward trajectory in the level of people being physically active. Mm. And that, of course, has a number of consequences, one of them most specifically being an increase in the number of people overweight and obese, and in particular our children. The numbers have gone from 1 in 5 to 1 in 4.
Mm. When I was a boy, and that was only yesterday, Fiona, I used to have to go outside and play. Kids don't seem to do a lot of that these days.
That's quite true. However, we are encouraging parents to think about the games that they used to play themselves as children, mm-hmm. and to get their kids to start playing these games. We know, for example, that one of the games that was particularly popular some years ago was backyard cricket, or even it's something as simple as throwing a ball. Mm. Game of hopscotch, yep. Bit of skipping, something like that.
What's the optimum for walking for kids and what's the optimum for adults per week?
Sure. The National Physical Activity Guidelines encourage adults to be physically active at least 30 minutes most days of the week. And that physical activity can be as simple as doing 3 short 10-minute bursts. And the gold standard is that during that time of physical activity, mm-hmm. you've got a bit of huff and puff happening so that you're in fact spending part of that time with your heart rate increased. Mm-hmm. For kids, we encourage them to be at least, and it varies based on the age range, but generally we're looking at encouraging children to be physically active for at least 60 minutes each day.
Wow, that's amazing. 60 minutes.
It is, but, you know, that that means
it's
that
just having
time.
The time.
It's true, yeah, trying to find the time, isn't it?
But it's time. Time is the really difficult part.
I think that's the issue, isn't it? We're all time poor and stressed and running around and multi-skilling and, you know, God knows what, and juggling all sorts of things. I think a lot of us would love to get out there and walk, and I know this sounds like a giant excuse. It's just actually having the time.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's not till the weekend where that's when you get it.
I'm a full-time working mum, and with children who need to go here, there and everywhere, and I just feel like I'm constantly run out of time.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've started doing recently is making, on a Saturday when I have to go shopping, I actually try and make a point of, if I haven't got a really big shop, just trying to walk to the shops and walk my daughter with me. So that's an opportunity for us to do some physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
So what I try and also do is, if she's actually at a sporting event as well, is try and take that time. And I'll often say to one of the other mums, look, how about we go for a bit of a walk around the oval at the same time?
Yeah.
So simple things like cleaning the windows, vacuuming, all of those things are actually a part of being physically active.
Mm.
So there's lots of things that we can do in our day-to-day lives which increase our level of physical activity. It doesn't have to be a set piece of exercise.
Fiona Bailey, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
Walktober, the CEO of Physical Activity Australia, and the benefits of walking. Get those walking shoes on.
This is Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking.
We love travelling on Mind Food. Michael's just topped off a helicopter. Where have you been this time?
I went to Hong Kong. And
What was that like?
Well, I've been to Hong Kong many times.
Yeah.
And I was actually invited to visit the Peninsula Hotel, which is
the famous one.
That's right. Oldest hotel in Hong Kong. And it has a fascinating history behind it, privately owned.
Mm.
But they have renovated all the rooms. And I guess for many years, you know, when I've gone there, they're very opulent. They really are quite extraordinary.
Mm.
These new rooms are completely paperless. There is no paper. By your bedside is what looks like an iPad, and you swipe it, or you wave your hand, you know, mm-hmm. across it. And everything you need, so whether you want to close the curtains, turn the lights on, order ice, water, room service, whatever, you do through this platform, this screen.
Wow.
And throughout the room, you know, near the curtains, there's a button to close curtains, and on the desk, you push a button and up comes a mirrored mirror, you know. It's absolutely extraordinary. I've never stayed in a hotel room like it.
Did you like it, though? Because some people would find that really confronting.
Yeah. Well, look, I've got to tell you, when I first walked in, I thought, wow, this is a huge departure for this hotel. When you walk into the Peninsula in Hong Kong, you know, they pick you up in a Rolls Royce. It's ridiculous. It's
so
opulent.
You look so funny in a Rolls Royce. It's right up your alley, actually.
Well, I love a bit of comfort. But the thing is, when you walk into the lobby, it's very old style.
Yeah.
So, you know, they are famous for their afternoon tea.
Did you do that at all?
No, not this trip.
No.
I have done it before, and it is fantastic. But up in the sort of the gods is an orchestra, you know, playing.
Oh, wow.
And it is very opulent. You know, it's a really beautiful looking hotel. So when you walk into the rooms, and they're extremely modern.
Yes.
You know, the colour palette is very subtle now. Of course, you walk in and you've just got that extraordinary harbour view, you know, all of Hong Kong. Mm. But anyway, what we've done is I've done a story, and it's coming up in a new edition.
Yep.
And I interviewed and was given access to all behind the scenes of this hotel. So, you know.
The whole workings of it.
That's right. And all the different kitchens.
Yeah.
And, you know, the bakery. And there's a brand new chocolatier with a chocolate chef they've brought him from Belgium and created this whole new kitchen for him.
Oh, my goodness.
It really is extraordinary. And while I was there, they took me into a suite. And, well, the suite is even more extraordinary and buttons and goodness knows what. But as I was there, I looked out the window and there was a window cleaner.
Wow.
And we were on the 24th floor. And so through the glass, I interviewed the window cleaner.
Yeah, you would.
And so, yeah. So we have this extraordinary shot of the window cleaner and me interviewing the window cleaner because, you know, we've spoken to all sorts of people, the florist and the people in the orchestra, and, you know, all behind the scenes. But there is this extraordinary photo that's coming up in the November edition of this window cleaner at the 24th floor. As he's sort of covering the window with bubbles and me interviewing him.
Well, what's it like, though, for the people when you talk to them that work behind the scenes? There must be a lot of pride working in something like that.
Oh, they are. And interesting enough, they all spoke about how much it was very much like a family-run company. They were all very supportive of each other. Mm-hmm. They were very proud of the hotel.
Mm.
And they were very proud of this new technology.
So if people would like to go there, it's really an experience. How long would you recommend to go?
Look,
a few days?
I think it's very much a destination for a very special occasion across a weekend or a 3-4 day kind of thing.
Okay.
There is so much to do in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And it's there are so many great dining, you know, options and bars. And you know, the shopping is extraordinary.
Mm-mm-mm.
Every brand in the world is there.
Well, I'm glad you had a great time.
Look, I've got as I said, the story's coming up. The photography is fantastic.
I can't wait to see that guy.
Yeah. I hired a photographer up there and spent my last day running around. I got up very, very early and I've done basically, it's a 24 hours day in the life of a hotel, you know, behind the scenes and in front of the, you know, what you see.
So, fantastic. Yeah. All that and more coming up in Mind Food. And of course, this is Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking. And for anything that you've heard on today's show, jump onto mindfood.com. Well, just on the weekend, Michael, I was on top of the studios cleaning the solar panels. And I tell you what, we're generating power like you won't believe here.
Really? I thought you were hanging washy now.
Not from that great height. We've got Mim Lowe on the line joining us today.
And listen, we've worked with Mim Lowe on many stories in Mind Food over the years in terms of our environment section. Welcome to the show, Mim.
Thank you. It's lovely to be on the show with Michael.
Now, today we're going to talk about how energy efficiency can be part of everyday life. And I know that for most of us, we just want those quick, simple, easy tips that, you know, it's not hard, but we should just change a few things and before you know it, it's much more efficient.
Yeah, well, there are some simple things, and I think a lot of it comes down to the way you live indoors and the way your house is set up or whatever sort of your domicile arrangement is. And most people will find that if they do this a bit of classic draft proofing, that their energy bills will go down and their house will be cozier and warmer. And that might just be simply a matter of walking around the house and finding where cold or warm air is escaping, and that's just proven beyond doubt that that's going to definitely affect how efficient your home is, and essentially mean that at the end of the month you won't have much more to worry about in terms of electricity bills. The other thing is that in winter, certainly in Melbourne where I'm sitting at the moment, it's much easier just to perhaps put a cardi or a jumper on, or not necessarily put the thermostat up too high, and it's just simple, old school, what probably my mum and dad and your mum and dad would have done as a matter of course, and if we just sort of think sensibly, that sort of stuff would just become part of everyday life.
Do you think we've got a bit soft and lazy? You know, there's nothing like flicking on the old heater, you know, when it's cold, and, you know, do you think we've just got a bit sort of lazy on it all?
Well, the thing that I particularly like is when you flick the old heater on because you want to be nice and warm, even though it is in the middle of winter, and you want to get around your house and whatever you're wearing, and then it gets a little bit hot, so then you open the door a little bit. It's I think we've just stopped thinking a little bit, basically, and, you know, if you just stop and have a look at what's going on, then it would go back to just old-fashioned logic and, you know, the way we probably did things 20 years ago.
If you've got a family and you've got all the kids and you've got to do the washing, is there any truth that doing it late at night is more energy efficient?
Well, it does, because you're using off-peak, especially if you have solar panels, which I do on my inner-city Melbourne home. I also happen to have two small boys handy who are very happy to do the strange hanging out of washing at night. Essentially, if you also have solar panels, it's the time that you just can still get your feed in tariff, make the most out of make the most out of what you're earning, and also get an off-peak tariff. It just makes sense. The rule of thumb is don't put any appliance on until it's night time. Stick your dishwasher on at night, put your load on overnight, and then you're maximising your profits and minimising your expenditure.
And, you know, how easy is that? You know, that's just good common sense, you know, when you hear it like that. Now, I know you are working with the Climate Reality Project. What about the food we eat? You know, what are some solutions in and around that?
So, I don't know about you, but certainly in the inner city in Melbourne, it's almost like we need a veggie patch help group. We're all doing the thing where you don't need a lot of land. It might be a little raised bed. I personally went to my local veggie market, which was like not a retail one, a wholesale one, and they had some spare boxes that are about maybe a metre and a half by a metre and a half, and they about a metre off the ground. And we just took a couple of them home on the back of a ute that we hired from Bunnings and filled them through with dirt. Put a little bit of grey water that comes from our bath every night, go straight into the veggie patch, and we can grow enough broccoli, tomato, a few little bits of cabbage and spinach, and it's fun. The boys love doing it.
Well, Mim, look, thank you very much for joining us today. Mim Lowe from the Climate Reality Project, how energy efficient can be part of every day of your life. Thanks for your time today.
You're welcome. Pleasure.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
We're talking beauty, skincare, an area that's very, very important with all these people we talk to, Michael, about your skin and health.
I know, exactly. And I'd like to welcome to the show Melinda Ea. Hi, Melinda.
Hi, Michael.
Now, today we're going to talk about how to look after problem skin.
Yes.
Because things like adult acne, let's face it, are not great.
No, it's not. You sort of think you've left that behind, don't you?
God, you hope you have.
So many people have it, though.
I think it's
quite
increasing.
Common, especially in women.
Why is it more in women?
Actually, to do with hormones. When in the teenage years, it tends to be men because the testosterone really, you know, shoots up and the hormones produce more sebum in the skin. But then adult acne is more common in women, and they don't know exactly why, but they think it's just a hormonal shift in their 20s.
So when women get pregnant, is it another thing that kicks in as well in that time or not really?
Definitely you can get some major breakout problems when you're pregnant, and that's all to do with your hormones. And when you're pregnant, everything kind of, the hormones kickstart all that overproduction of sebum, and so you can get breakouts when you're pregnant, which is a shame on top of everything else.
Now, listen, with the, adult acne, you know, in teenagers it's often hormones raging around your body, but in terms of adult acne, you know, is it diet, is it stress, is it a combination of everything, do you think?
Yes, acne is definitely, it's an inflammatory condition. So they do categorise it as a sensitive skin condition, which is interesting. But it's to do with bacteria and also just that inflammation. So when you've got, you know, if you're not really looking after your skin properly, if your lifestyle, you're not eating properly, your skin really needs to eliminate all those toxins out of your body through your skin. And if that's not working properly, then it all gets clogged, the pores get clogged, the bacteria is stuck in there, it all gets inflamed and you get the pustules, which is not what anybody wants. But yes, it's there's a lot of different things contributing to acne.
So in terms of problem skin though, like how important is the cleaning process? Because I know, you know, if I've got, you know, dodgy skin or scaly skin or dry skin or whatever, I tend to then just keep it pretty basic with water and, you know, pretty minimal cleaning. Like what do you suggest?
Yes, with something like acne, you want to avoid things like those really creamy cleansers and things like that. So you want to cleanse with cleansers that have got glycolic acid and things like that that really clear blocked pores. If you've got sensitive skin and, you know, it's as you said, it's a bit itchy or you've got a bit of dryness there, you still definitely want to cleanse, but you want to look for those gentle milky cleansers. And I'd look for things like oat extracts or anti-inflammatories like cucumber. So those sort of ingredients, chamomile is really good. But with really sensitive skin, less products overall, so yes, keep it simple. Less time on your skin, you know, not a lot of friction, not a lot of, you know, harsh, you know, if you're using a flannel and things like that. So just the less is more rule with sensitive skin.
What about the products that you use? Because, you know, it all gets down to what you can afford.
You need to focus on very simple things like plant oils are great for moisturising your skin. So if you don't have a lot of money for a skincare routine, you could get some jojoba oil. A rosehip oil is excellent.
Yeah.
Try to get the best quality one you can afford. You can just use that as a moisturiser. And also, there's a lot of cheaper, you know, cleansers, I suppose, and you can try them. You want to just avoid things like artificial fragrances, parabens, sodium lauryl sulfate, if you've got sensitive skin. So try to get the most natural cleanser you can. And, you know, if you're really sensitive, you could just use those oils to cleanse too. That can work quite well.
And Melinda, what about toners? You know, like I don't use that, but how important is that in terms of, you know?
Toners, it depends on the type of toner, I think. But toners definitely just lift off that residue left by the cleanser. So it's not essential.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you've got problem skin, just keep it really simple and, you know, you probably don't need the toner.
Hey, thanks, Melinda.
No problem. Thanks, Michael and Ben. Bye-bye.
And listen, for more details on beauty and this season's new products and what's on counter, go to mindfood.com.
We're now moving into health on Mind Food Radio, and Michael, it's Total Life Health.
That's right. I'd like to welcome to the show Sharmila. Hi, Sharmila.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good. Now, you're the author of a new book called Total Life Diet. That's a wonderful name for a book. What does it actually mean?
Okay, Michael, the Total Life Diet is based on a complete diet and lifestyle program that I've developed and I've been running for the last 9 years. My primary objective has always been to help my clients achieve their health and weight loss goals, and my clients have had extraordinary results, so I wrote this book to share my program with everyone.
So what sort of things do they undertake in the program?
So I start off with the basics of a healthy, balanced diet. So Michael, you may know that many people are confused about a healthy, balanced diet, so I help to sort out the confusion with that. So for example, many people don't realize that fruit and low-fat dairy products and legumes are carbohydrate foods. So a slice of bread is no different to an apple. So that's quite important. And then I also spend a lot of time with food quantities. Now, I would go so far as to say that food quantities are vital, because if someone eats too much of a healthy food, you can still gain weight.
And how important is the exercise component in the total life diet?
Okay, exercise is important. It's important for everyone. So whether someone is 20 years old or whether they're 80 years old, exercise is important for good health. But I would say that the diet is the main feature. The most important part of a healthy lifestyle is a good diet.
Now, before you started in private practice, you were actually employed in the public health system. Now, did that drive you in terms of what you saw there and your experience in nutrition and health, having worked as a clinical dietitian, to create what you've done?
Absolutely, Michael. I felt that I could be of more help out in the community, helping to prevent people going into hospital in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me, in terms of the clients that you're seeing, are they, you know, really overweight, or are they people that just want a healthier lifestyle?
Okay, I see all kinds of people in my practice. So some might just be a little bit overweight. Many people have pre-diabetes, which is borderline diabetes. Many have diabetes. Some have high cholesterol levels or high triglyceride levels. So I see quite a range of people. But the main areas I work in are prevention and management of diabetes and heart disease and weight control.
Mm.
My diet is quite different to everything else, Michael. So it's actually, it's a healthy lifestyle that people can follow for the rest of their lives.
Mm.
So it's just changing one's eating habits. And once you understand the basics, you just follow it for the rest of your life. And it's easy. Honestly, it's really easy.
But how long does it take to kind of move those perhaps bad eating habits?
I would say a few weeks. I initially have a long initial consult, and then I usually see people every fortnight.
Yep.
And in a few weeks, we cover the basic concepts.
Mm.
And so it takes, and see, a lot of what I do is about making changes or substitutions.
Yeah.
So if we don't entirely take something out and then leave someone with nothing, we come up with a healthy substitute in its place.
So you know how you referred to breakfast, you know, there was sort of eggs and toast, and then perhaps another one is cereal and yogurt. I've got to say, for me personally, breakfast is the tough one because, you know, I would have that, and perhaps the third breakfast I might have, you know, on the third day might be, say, tomato and avocado on toast. But I find, other than that, what else can you have for breakfast to kind of get the engines running for the day?
Okay, lots of options. So we talked about the cereal and the yogurt.
Yes.
The omega-3 eggs on toast, even baked beans on toast.
Yes.
Low-fat cheese on toast.
Well, I love cheese on toast, yeah.
Yep, low-fat, that's important though.
Mm-hmm.
And even, and if someone is really in a hurry, they could even have something like Up and Go. Even a cup of milk with 2 teaspoons of Milo or Ovaltine in it.
I've had a couple of those Up and Goes. I feel terrible when I have those.
Do you?
It's
why?
Like, I just think, I am so lazy. I used to sit and have breakfast. Now I'm drinking and driving and having breakfast. Like, what the hell's happened?
Yeah. You're multi-skilling.
That's absolutely fine, Michael. In our busy world, we have to take advantage of what I call healthy convenience food.
Yes. So, Marla, that's been...
Very interesting.
It's really interesting. I wish you all the best for your new book, Total Life Diet. It's great to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Michael.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
Summer's just around the corner. Michael, we're getting ready for a beautiful time at the beach.
We sure are. And on today's show, we've got Dr. Karen Grieve. She is head of research and development with Sun Sensibility. Welcome to the show, Doctor.
Thank you very much.
Now, the statistics are horrific. Each year, more than 10,000 Australians are treated for melanoma, and that's a staggering average of 27 people a day. And unfortunately, more than 1,200 die. It's just absolutely horrific. Tell us about this new research that you've got and the inroads you're making.
Well, look, what we're trying to do with the Sun Sensibility campaign is actually gauge how well people have taken on the message of looking after their skin and give them some feedback, because what we find is that we tell people that, you know, being in the sun for too long is damaging the skin, but they don't actually see any effects of too much sun for, say, 10, 20 or 30 years.
Mm.
So what the Sun Sensibility campaign is trying to do is use a special camera to show people the damage that's already occurred under their skin.
Now, interesting enough, I've read some of the statistics, and it's up to 80% of lifetime sun exposure can occur before the age of 18.
Yes, that's true.
That's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary, but when you think about what we do before the age of 18, we've got a lot more free time.
Mm.
We're encouraged to go outside and play.
Yeah.
And so it just, because of, you know, young kids just through their lifestyle spend a bit more time outside, they do tend to build up, you know, 80% of the damage before they're 18.
Do you think we're becoming much more aware, though, and better at, you know, slip, slop and slap?
Look, I think we are, particularly the generation that went through the slip, slop, slap campaign.
Mm.
And I think in the next, you know, 5-10 years, we'll start to see the effect of that campaign as those people get a bit older, and when, as they reach the age when they would normally start to develop skin cancers, I think we'll actually see a drop-off. But it means that we, you know, we have to be vigilant. We have to keep being vigilant because...
Mm.
You know, it's not just one generation we have to educate. We have to keep educating each generation as they come along.
So, Doctor, you talk about this camera. What happens? How does that work?
Oh, look, it's really easy and really straightforward. It's just like getting a photograph taken, but rather than using visible light, it's using a special wavelength of UV light.
Mm-hmm.
and the light can actually penetrate a little bit deeper into the skin, so we can actually take a picture of the pigment changes or the dark spots that are in the deeper layers of the skin and haven't yet migrated up to where we can see them.
So when you say migrate, so as we get older, what age would you expect to see this migration? And is that when skin cancers and things start to happen?
Look, it can be. We tend to see the pigment changes happen a bit earlier than the skin cancers. So we'll start to see this pigment migrating up into the skin probably as we 30, 35, 40.
Great, my age.
Yeah, both of us actually.
All right. And then how do you treat it?
What we need to do is make sure that people are using really good sun protection because the body can actually go and repair some of the damage that's been done if we protect. And so this is where, you know, good sunscreens are vital for people of all ages.
Now, there's a photo bus tour, isn't there, that's going to, and a team, that's going to go and travel around, I think it's 21 metro and regional locations across Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia and WA. Now, that kicks off from 9th of October. When people see that, what can they experience?
Oh, look, when they see the SunSense UV photo bus, they will be taken through, first of all, they'll get their photograph taken, and we'll have skincare analysts on board that can explain to them what the photograph is. So it's not simply, you know, here's a scary photograph. They will explain to them what the photograph means, and then there'll be special sunscreen consultants there that can take them through, you know, some sunscreen options and give them some recommendations, and they'll also be given some samples of SunSense sunscreens to take away.
Well, look, great course. Thank you very much for talking with us today. We've been chatting about Sun Sensibility, the campaign, and, of course, for more details, jump onto mindfood.com.
Mindfood Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
We're talking honey. I was at a function on the weekend, Michael, and sitting there, and someone said, Ben, you've got a bee on your neck. And being a hypochondriac, of course, everybody goes into a panic. But at the end of the day, bees are great. And who would have ever thought of this idea, sticking them on rooftops?
Well, you know, a couple of months ago, I did that story of hotels in London. And there's a very famous there's a very famous hotel that has a range of beehives on their rooftop.
Mm.
And I know that is actually happening around the world in the travel industry, that a lot of upmarket hotels are now, you know, harvesting, I guess, their own honey.
Maybe we could put one on top of your office in town, Mind Food Honey.
Yeah, I wonder if we could.
I reckon you could.
We'd talk to the landlord. Why not? Hey, listen, on today's show, we've got Matt from the Melbourne City Rooftop Honey. Hi, Matt.
G'day, how are you going?
Good. Now, your company is 2 years old. You weren't originally from the honey world. You and your partner, Vanessa, actually came from IT. How is the business going?
It's going amazing, actually. What once started as a small hobby project where we thought we'd have one or two hives in and around the city quickly exploded into 2 years later where we have 47 hives, and today we've got 365 people on a waiting list.
Wow.
And businesses wanting to get a hive at their premises.
Now, are they mainly businesses or are they families, you know, in suburbia?
Okay, the way we structured it is we didn't want to exclude anyone, and we wanted individuals involved as well as businesses. So we would say probably 40% of them are individuals who donated carport roofs and dwelling roofs where possible. And a couple of those instances are in back corners on the ground.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But where possible, we like to put the bees up on the rooftop.
Yeah.
And the good reason for that is the bees from the hive will be flying to and from their foraging areas above our heads without us even knowing and interfering with us.
So how much honey do you get out of all this?
That's true.
Dependent on the colony of bees, very much, and their drive, so to speak. We have one of our hives last year, our top hive, produced 93 kilos out of a single hive.
Are you serious?
Pretty amazing, yeah.
What on earth did they do with all that honey?
It's their food for winter, and we take what we can off the top and make sure we leave enough for them to get through the winter where they can't forage, and that's their food that they eat.
And do they just give it to neighbours as well and things? They must do.
Well, we have a honey share set up with the people involved, so we have a honey share, they get a percentage, and the rest of it we retail to try and cover our costs.
Now, I don't know much about the production of honey, but once you've got it, you know, from the hives, do you have to do anything to it?
We run it through a bit of a mesh gauze filter to pull out any, to put it nicely, bee bits that might be in there, little legs that may
be poo.
Do bees actually poo?
They sometimes will break a leg off. So we just put that through a bit of a mesh filter, and that's the extent of our filtering. So there's a lot of pollen in our product, which makes it really beneficial for numerous.
It's so good for your honey too.
It is, isn't it?
Matt, thanks for being on the show. For more details about Melbourne City Rooftop Honey, how to keep a honey, what to do for honey, and all those fantastic honey recipes we've got, go to mindfood.com.
Well, from the peninsula, it's back here into the radio studio. What an exciting program today, the beehives. I think that's a great story.
What? I am seriously thinking we should get some.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for joining us. Join us next week here on Mind Food Radio. Until next time, Michael, have a nice week.
You too.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking, was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick Kayrus. Bogart Torelli speaking.